Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 22nd, 2010, and you're listening to show number 55 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be moving on to aphorism number 20 and possibly 21 today. We continue to want to welcome our many new members. We've got a lot of active discussions and blogs going on. And I wanted to just welcome everyone and do jump in there. We've got many listeners on the live chat. And if they comment, we will announce what their questions or comments are on the air. And we're going to start with some inspirational quotes. There's somebody on Twitter called Doc Marion. I think she's a homeopath. And she was retweeted by Audie Matheson. The quote is by Jonathan Swift that says, "Vision is the art of seeing things invisible to others." Maybe we can make some sense out of that one. And it sounds like people are able to hear us on the radio show. We are live today. And then another one by Doc Marion is a quote by Coleman Barks that says, "Freedom is returning to the deep being we already are, beneath all the clothes of our stories." I think we can take all of these quotes to heart. They make so much connection with our homeopathic practice and understanding. And I wanted to also thank Dr. Nancy Malik, who's on Twitter with us, for retweeting a link to Homeopathy World Community. She says, "Have you read the Hippocratic Oath lately?" And there is a fantastic blog going on about that. I hear you, Vera. You there?
Hi, Debbie. Yeah, I'm here.
Great. I'm just finishing up the intro. I wanted to thank Dr. Nisant Nambasan, MD, for posting homeopathic economics. Is this what is terrorizing them? And I also reposted the Monsanto documentary about GM foods, genetically modified foods. And at one point, that documentary was not able to be seen in totality. It was broken up into like 8 different 10-minute sections, but I found it in one long video, and it's really worth watching it. Let's see. I think we are ready to go ahead and move on to aphorism number 20.
Okay. So let's do it. Let's read the Organon. Aphorism 20. This spirit-like power to alter man's state of health, which lies hidden in the inner nature of medicines, can in itself never be discovered by us by a mere effort of reason. It is only by experience of the phenomena it displays when acting on the state of health of man that we can become clearly cognizant of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's interesting to me is the parallel that is being drawn. If you remember at the beginning, we kept talking about, or Hahnemann kept telling us about the hidden inner nature of man. Now mm-hmm. we're talking about the hidden inner nature of medicine.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting. It's like everything has its obvious nature and everything has its hidden nature. And the hidden nature we see in terms of its effects, the obvious nature we see in terms of what we can perceive with our senses.
Okay. So, but we must work with what we can perceive. But this is our outer clothing, our outer cloak of what's hidden beneath, with what's hidden beneath us, and what's also hidden beneath the medicines. So, if we're looking at a clump of sulfur or a dash of salt, we're looking at something exterior, but the healing power is something that's hidden with resides within it.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me that the foods that we eat, we are looking at a beautiful apple, a pear, or some kind of fruit, and it's a beautiful thing to eat. And today we think we can break it up into nutritional components and say, okay, you just need this and take a pill that's going to give you this element. And instead, it's really the hidden interior within God's given food that this spiritual essence, this it's a non-material. It's the totality of that hidden within that food, the nutrition that we really need to feed our own spirit. Did I go off on a tangent again? I have a tendency to do that. But it seems like it all comes around to the same thing. What is on the outside, what we can see, what we can touch, and then what's on the inside, which is immaterial and yet is the source of the energy.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also the element of what speaks to what. And in a way, it's what in the hidden nature of medicines or foods, these are the elements of those medicines or foods or anything that can impact on our inner nature. It's like sometimes you're speaking to someone in words and you hear their words, they hear your words, and you're communicating on that level. But if it's a deep relationship that is touching you and changing you, and you're changing the other person and touching them, they feel there's communication going on a much deeper level as well. And the words that can be perceived are in a way just an expression of a much deeper communication. The words themselves may or may not change you, but something in the deeper communication impacts on those involved with it. It can't not. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. In fact, the words may not be what's being communicated at all.
Right,
because the intonation, the gestures, the way it's being said, the way somebody's looking at or not looking at you, those all are really speaking much louder than the words. And we have a comment by Frank Mueller, who says the translation is not completely correct. The German says, somebody needs to read German for me. Help me, Begleitende Umstände, which are not the modalities alone, but also all the circumstances. So hopefully he will help us to put this into context and to see what where those words fit in the translation.
Is he referring to aphorism 20?
I assume he is if he's listening to the show. This is aphorism 20. So maybe he will tell us exactly. Frank, please continue with your comment, and we'll try and sort that out. So, okay. Today's show...
Umständen. I think that's probably... Okay. He's probably referring to this word phenomena. Yeah. Anyway, let's carry on to 21 in the meantime, and if we see more comments from Frank, we're very happy to include. And Rochelle, I'm glad you can hear it today.
Yes.
Okay, would you like
for some reason I will be happy to read. I hope you're hearing me okay, because you're kind of bumping in and out today in sound for me. So let's hope this is clear. Aphorism number 21 states, now, as it is undeniable that the curative principle in medicines is not in itself perceptible, and as in pure experiments with medicines conducted by the most accurate observers, nothing can be observed that can constitute them the medicines or remedies except that power of causing distinct alterations in the state of health of the human body, and particularly in that of the healthy individual, and of exciting in him various definite morbid symptoms. So it follows that when medicines act as remedies, they can only bring their curative property into play by means of this, their power of altering man's state of health, by the production of peculiar symptoms, and that therefore we have only to rely on the morbid phenomena which the medicines produce in the healthy body as the sole possible revelation of their indwelling curative power in order to learn what disease-producing power and at the same time what disease-curing power each individual medicine possesses. And, okay.
Okay, so if we go back a bit, if we see nothing, can you hear me?
Definitely.
Hello? Good.
Yes, you're good.
If you see, nothing can be observed that constitute the medicines or remedies except the power of causing distinct alterations in the state of health of the human body, particularly in that of the healthy individual. So we're saying that if something just leaves you bland, it's not going to change your state of health. Now, I tend to like to bring this to the level of people and relationships with people because I think that's very immediate for all of us. When you meet someone and they don't alter your state in any way.
If they don't alter your state
in any way,
I think, yes.
Perhaps you don't have eye contact with them, you have minimal eye contact with them, you bought something from them, you sold something to them, you had some kind of exchange. But that exchange did not touch you inside in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Then this is not a person or a relationship that has the possibility of affecting your health in any way. It doesn't speak to your hidden inner part of yourself. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, if you have a substance that does not speak to you internally in any way, in any shape or form, then that substance can't be a medicine or a remedy for you.
Okay. So this means...
Just to take that point one step further, if someone actually gives me a remedy and that remedy does not touch me at all, for me it's not medicinal. It has no impact. So that's a tangent, that's a sidetrack. And, of course, I'm waving my hands around because that's what we do when we talk on a phone.
Oh, I'm very excited when you're waving your hands, Vera, because I know this is an important – see, you're touching me now with just the words of I'm now waving my hands with you, and we're having this conversation because this is something that's energetic, that's transferring between us over the airwaves that we are – thousands and thousands of miles apart. And yet this is an important point that you're obviously making for us to understand that. And I was wondering whether this applies to, like, if somebody is a sensitive doing a proving that often you'll hear on the blogs that people say, well, just give everybody such and such a remedy and see what happens. And then we know as a result that there will be people who that remedy will touch, will impact, will be sensitive to, and then there will be others who it will have no effect. And so is this evidence-based that this remedy is a potent, powerful medicinal substance? Well, for some people it is, and for some people it is not.
And that's how it will work in practice, that we know the symptoms it can produce in the healthy individual. So in the sick individual who has those symptoms, the inner, hidden inner nature of the medicine will speak to the hidden inner nature of the person, will speak to his vital force.
Uh-huh.
Guided by the symptom picture.
Okay, yeah. Guided by the symptom picture. Okay.
You have a marriage. It's like you have a marriage and in-laws. Okay, you have the vital force, which is the hidden inner nature of man, and you have the hidden inner nature of the medicine, and that's where the relationship is going on. And you have the in-laws, which is the symptom picture, and the medicinal substance that's been used. Sorry, that's a zany example.
If you bring the parent, the mother-in-law in, we're going to have some problems. They don't have a very good reputation, but, you know, they're only out for the best good of the children. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that we have a comment by Frank again. He agrees with Rochelle. It's no discussion about this aphorism. This is what the consultation is about. And, okay, so he's talking about the consultation rather than this particular aphorism.
Okay.
So why are we talking about marriage today?
Well, we're moving into the situation of matchmaking. We need to matchmake between the medicine and the disease state, the disease symptoms.
Okay.
So first of all, we're saying, on the one hand, you have the healthy person who becomes sick and has disease symptoms, as the parallel that was drawn in 19. I'm not sure whether the word is exactly parallel. On the one hand, we have the human being who is healthy, his vital force becomes deranged, he produces a symptom picture to give us a snapshot that will guide us to what's going on inside. And that snapshot leads us to a medicinal substance that's been given to a healthy individual, produces morbid symptoms in that healthy individual, and produces that way a snapshot of the medicine. So we compare the two snapshots and we see, do we have a match?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we're doing the matchmaking.
This is excellent, because what you just explained is that you start with the healthy individual. That's the base. And then the person gets sick. And so now we have the symptom picture. And then we have to relate it to the hidden interior, what the medicinal substance can do to return that person back into the healthy state. Whereas in medicines today that are gone through clinical trials, they get people to go into these trials who are already sick. And then they try and match a medicinal substance, a drug, that will remove the symptoms, which is an opposite way of going about finding a healing substance. And
Also we need to go back to something that you said, I think, yesterday. You talked about Hahnemann's confidence. When you're doing a clinical trial and you're saying, well, maybe this medicine will help in this particular situation, and you might be using the medicine in a way that is antagonistic to the symptoms. If it's wet, then dry it up. If it's dry, then moisturize it. If it's like in that form. Or it may simply be by chance, because you heard that this particular medicine had had an interesting side effect, that it has cured this and this problem. I'll give you an example, actually. Something that I heard once, that an antidepressant that was given to stroke patients on the assumption that they were depressed, actually helped them with recuperation from stroke. This was years and years and years ago. So here you have a side result that was noted, and then trials were done based on that side result to see if this antidepressant could have more far-reaching impact on people in recovery from stroke. So Hahnemann, he talks more about this in his lesser writings, on, I think, the curative power of medicines. But he talks a lot about how medicinal trials are very often done through chance. Now here, he's doing something investigating how a substance can alter the state of health in an individual. If we want to see a clearest picture possible, We'll give it to a healthy individual, because with a sick individual, we don't know what symptoms were there before, what symptoms are there after. We don't know what's the remedy and what's the pre-existing state. But if we give this medicine to a healthy individual where we know more or less their situation is stable, so anything that happens after that, we can attribute to the medicine. And then we can know something about the medicine's ability to alter the state of men, to alter the state of health in human beings. Now, if we add that to the law of similars, then we have the complete picture. Has that for cliffhanging?
We want to also say that he didn't just do this in one individual, take just one healthy individual, because each person does have their little idiosyncrasies, but you have to do it in many individuals so that you can cancel out some of the things that are very common, or some you would know better about how they do a proving or do a control study. But it has to be seen in more than one person, most normally, unless it's an extremely sensitive individual to that particular substance. And we did get a little bit into a realm about talking about Hahnemann's lesser writings. And what is Rochelle has a comment. She was taught that the remedy must have an energy.
This isn't relating to what we're discussing here. It's relating to a discussion that's going on at HWC.
I see. Okay, so they're having their own little conversation, side conversation. Okay.
Rochelle says the reason why in modern provings a full case is taken before the proving, so a comparison can take place. Exactly, that's what we're talking about. Just the one before wasn't.
Okay. And okay.
Okay,
so
we move
up.
On?
And yes, where are we here?
We're
in
on
terms
22.
Of aphorism 20. Okay, we're going to move to 22.
I think we have enough time to read it. Yeah, I'll read it and we'll see how much discussion we manage to have about it in the time we have left. Okay, but as nothing is to be observed in diseases that must be removed in order to change them into health, besides the totality of their signs and symptoms, and likewise medicines, here we have the matchmaking, can show nothing curative besides their tendency to produce morbid symptoms in healthy persons and to remove them in diseased persons, it follows, on the one hand, that medicines only become remedies and capable of annihilating diseases because the medicinal substance, by exciting certain effects and symptoms, that is to say, by producing a certain artificial morbid state, removes and abrogates the symptoms already present, to wit, the natural morbid state we wish to cure. On the other hand, it follows that for the totality of the symptoms of the disease to be cured, that medicine must be sought which, according as experience shall prove whether the morbid symptoms are most readily, certainly, and permanently removed and changed into health by similar or opposite medicinal symptoms, proved to have the greatest tendency to produce similar or opposite symptoms. Let me just read that without the long bracketed section, which confuses the sentence flow.
Okay.
It follows that for the totality of symptoms of the disease to be cured, that medicine must be sought which proved to have the greatest tendency to produce similar or opposite symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have a look at the footnote and stew with this aphorism a little bit. And I think we'll be discussing it more at length next week, really. The other possible mode of employing medicines for diseases, besides these two, is the allopathic method, in which medicines are given whose symptoms have no direct pathological relation to the morbid state, neither similar nor opposite, but quite heterogeneous to the symptoms of the disease. This procedure plays, as I have shown elsewhere, an irresponsible, murderous game with the life of the patient by means of dangerous, violent medicines whose action is unknown and which are chosen on mere conjectures and given in large and frequent doses. Anyone who's been through allopathic damage? Hands up! Again, by means of painful operations intended to lead the disease to other regions and taking the strength and vital juices of the patient through evacuations above and below, sweat or salivation, but especially through squandering the irreplaceable blood, as is done by the reigning routine practice used blindly and relentlessly, usually with a pretext that the physician should imitate and further the sick nature in its efforts to help itself, without considering how irrational it is to imitate and further these very imperfect, mostly inappropriate efforts of the instinctive, unintelligent vital energy which is implanted in our organism, so long as it is healthy to carry on life in a harmonious development, but not to heal itself in disease. Breath. That was a very long sentence.
Wow. Yes. I might. He's being quite strong here, and I might direct people to a recent blog that I just put up today. It's from the New York Times, entitled "The Medical System Today: Interns, Best Practices, and Guidelines." And part of that is examples of how thousands upon thousands of surgical procedures are done that you can get the same results via placebo surgery, where they just did a fake surgery and for arthritic on the knees and other kinds of things. And I wonder about persons who have body parts removed because of fear of getting a disease based on heredity and having certain factors. I mean, these are very, very drastic measures that people are taking before they even get an illness. And how do we come to some kind of place of composure or understanding about what is going on in a person's life? This is a really meaty aphorism, the number 22 plus the footnote, and I'm sure we will go into it at length on Sunday. And is there any way we want to tidy up?
Well, let's see if we can just finish reading quickly that footnote.
Okay,
just to have read it, and then we'll read it again. We stopped in the middle of talking about how the vital force, the vital energy, is basically unintelligent, Hahnemann is saying. For were it possessed of such a model ability to completely heal itself in disease, it would never have allowed the organism to get sick. When made ill by noxious agents, a life principle cannot do anything else than express its depression caused by disturbance of the regularity of its life, by symptoms, by means of which the intelligent physician is asked for aid. If this is not given, it strives to save by increasing the ailment, especially through violent evacuations, no matter what this entails, often with the largest sacrifices or destruction of life itself. For purposes of cure, the morbidly depressed vital energy possesses so little ability worthy of imitation, since all changes and symptoms produced by it in the organism are the disease itself. What intelligent physician would want to imitate it with the intention to heal if he did not thereby sacrifice his patient? I.e., if a patient is having diarrhea, you don't make them have more.
Put in simple form,
you don't say the body is evacuating, therefore this is what it needs to do more.
Okay. Well, we will have a lot of discussion. There's a lot of information there. And so aphorism number 21 and 20 is what we completed today. And we are making a match. We are matchmakers in our profession. Thank you so much for being with me today and for sharing our learning with the community, everyone.
And thanks, everyone.
Take your book off the shelf. Yes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you the next time. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.